This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick in Washington, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Our main concern now is make sure that we avoid an outbreak of cholera. So we will be vaccinating 800,000 people.
And that's Mozambique's Land and Environment Minister Celso Correa talking about the relief effort for survivors of Cyclone Idai. Also, we'll look at food distribution in Zimbabwe, the political violence in the Comoros, and more protests in Algeria. We'll have these stories and more for you, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead here on Africa News Tonight. In our top story at this hour, aid agencies in central Mozambique are recovering more bodies as they move to feed and treat those affected by Cyclone Idai. The powerful storm 2 weeks ago devastated the country and neighbouring Malawi and Zimbabwe, leaving at least 783 people dead. Mozambique says 138 cholera cases have now been detected in Beira. Mohamed Yusuf is there for us and has this report.
Helicopters fly in and out of Mozambique's Beira Airport, the center of humanitarian relief operations for Cyclone Idai. Aid agencies in the port city are scaling up their operations to feed the hungry and treat the sick. But aid agencies are also finding more bodies, says Mozambique's Land and Environment Minister Celso Correa.
In terms of a number of loss of lives, we have increased to 493. This is because we're getting information from the villages that we didn't know before. Our main concern now is make sure that we avoid an outbreak of cholera. So we will be vaccinating 800,000 people.
More than 130 cases of cholera have been reported in Beira so far. Meanwhile, areas of Mozambique's cyclone-ravaged coast remain cut off by flooding that left many homeless, says Correa.
We have 140,000 in our camps. And we believe that we have plus 150,000 displaced, but we expect to have around 1.8 million people affected by the storm. And this number is because we calculated the path that the cyclone took, and we have satellite images that show that there's some damages in some of the areas that we haven't reached yet.
Cyclone Idai hit the center of the southern African country with powerful winds and rains that swamped entire villages and town. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Beira, Mozambique.
As governments and aid agencies rush food and other necessities to victims of Cyclone Idai in southeastern Africa, there are concerns in Zimbabwe about proper distribution. Adi Gondo reports.
In some words, in Zimbabwe's Chimanimani district, cyclone victims are accusing officials from the ruling ZANU-PF party of politicizing aid distributions. There are some concerns that aid is being distributed along partisan lines. Affected villages this week accused ZANU-PF officials of arbitrary food distributions. The villages say Nokutula Mwatsikenyere, the Chimanimani West Member of Parliament, directed social welfare staff to distribute aid from United Nations Children's Agency to ZANU-PF supporters only. She rejects the allegations against her and ward councillor Love Mootse.
No, we were just telling if you can give those who come from far away and they were giving. Later on, they realized the food was not enough. Then they said, no, don't worry. Those we didn't get, we are going to give you tomorrow. You wait for us. Tomorrow will be here. The whole day we spent at the MDA waiting for them. They didn't come back. When I tried to phone them, their phones were all switched off. We spent the whole day waiting.
The Zimbabwe Minister of Information and Media also denied the media reports of food politicization in the affected areas. The government says it has banned political parties from being involved in distributing food. One villager in Ward 17 who spoke on condition of anonymity complained to members of the media about the food distribution. She says they are being denied food because she's a member of the opposition movement for democratic change. Ward 17 chairman Chimanimani West Love Mootseya says that it is not true. Love Mo says there is a team doing the distribution. If you can contact the MP, he says he doesn't give food or hampers. He says there is not enough food and people shouldn't listen to rumors.
Cyclone Idai last week left hundreds of thousands of people in Zimbabwe, Mozambique and Malawi without access to food, clean water or shelter. Floods have cut the roads to many areas, hampering local and international efforts to get aid to victims. There's video footage on social media in which it appears that ZANU-PF trucks were loaded with food aid. Government critics say that shows aid is being misappropriated. The government, however, says it was due to the shortage of trucks to transport the food, but it has since banned the use of party trucks. The United Nations Communications Chief in Zimbabwe, Sirak Gebrehiwot, says United Nations is investigating the allegations.
They are looking for evidence. In fact, this morning we had the provincial minister with the provincial administrator met with the EU ambassador and the UN ambassador, Mr. Bishop Parajuli and Mr. Timo. And the same issue was raised. The minister was, she reiterated saying that the government's position is, I'm not saying everything is baseless.
Gabriel Hewitt says Zimbabwe officials gave them assurances that such reports will be dealt with. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo.
While staying in the region, Malawi is struggling to get relief aid to victims of Cyclone Idai, which killed at least 60 people there and displaced hundreds of thousands. While the heaviest hit southern areas are largely cut off, one Malawian activist is on a personal mission to help those affected. Reporter Lamek Messina has more from Chikwawa.
Businesswoman Abida Mia has so far collected about $20,000 worth of food, blankets and clothes for Malawian victims of Cyclone Idai. Mia's charity, Reach Out and Touch, delivered bags of maize, fish, blankets, clothes and plastic sheets for makeshift shelters for those most in need. Her charity began about 2 weeks ago after seeing the destruction caused by cyclone flooding firsthand.
It happened so suddenly and I obviously had money that I was budgeting for other, things to do. So I took all that cash aside and said, let's buy maize and go out into the field and assist the people because there was such a huge need and people were starving and didn't have anything to eat.
Mia and her husband are well off. They raise livestock and operate one of the Malawi's largest butcheries. People noticed Mia's effort to help and began bringing their donations to her home in Blanta.
And I was really shocked. People were actually walking from their homes, maybe 15 to 20 kilometers away with some clothes that they wanted to give. And they were bringing their fairly new clothes.
Mia estimates Reach Out and Touch has helped over 1,000 flood survivors. The group brings aid to hard-to-reach areas like East Bank, where roads and bridges suffered severe damage. Despite their efforts, flood-affected Malawians like Modesta Jackson says there are still many people in need. She says although they are given such food, it is still not enough. Their homes are empty and they lost almost everything, says Jackson. They are appealing to the government to provide them with seeds so that they can replant soon after the water recedes. Malawi's Department of Disaster Management and Preparedness says Cyclone Idai affected nearly 1 million people in the country. Officials say $30 million is needed for flood displaced villagers living in 187 evacuation camps. Alfred Fund is a manager of Chikwawa Simpimbi evacuation camp. He says they were only given 4 tents for accommodation and many people have no proper place to sleep. It gets worse when it starts raining, says Fundi. Some find refuge in school classrooms while others squeeze themselves in at the health center, he says. In the long term, says Mia, villagers need to be moved to higher ground to avoid flooding. In the meantime, and while they are waiting for support, Mia says her charity will continue to do what it can to help Malawi's victims of Cyclone Idai. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Chikwawa, Malawi.
Authorities in the Comoros are on high alert after four people died in a gunfight at a military camp where police had detained an opposition presidential candidate. VOA Swahili service reports that at least seven people were injured in the violence yesterday. A government official suggests the violence was not related to police arresting Swelihi Mohammed, one of 12 politicians who ran against President Azali Assoumani in Sunday's election. Assoumani changed the constitution last year, paving the way for him to remain in office until 2029. Police also took into custody more than a dozen women who were protesting against Azali's government. Opposition leaders claim the election was stolen with widespread fraud. Observers from three regional bodies, the African Union, the Common Market of Eastern and Southern Africa, and the African Standby Forces of the East, say the election lacked credibility. The U.S. government has now ordered its personnel to leave the tiny archipelago, citing gunfire, political unrest, and infrastructure disruptions. Moving to North Africa now, and police say up to a million people took to the streets of Algiers today to demand the resignation of Algerian President Abdelaziz Bouteflika and changes to the political system after the army there called for the removal of the 82-year-old leader. Security forces used water cannons to disperse the demonstrations, the largest yet in six straight weeks of Friday protests. The Army Chief of Staff, Lieutenant General Ahmed Kayed Salah, has asked the Constitutional Council to rule whether the ailing president is fit for office. But leaders of the protest movement reject the army's transition plan and are demanding the overthrow of the entire ruling elite. William Lawrence is the professor of international relations at George Washington University and spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shanawi about the complicated succession problem.
The army did not want to relinquish its behind-the-scenes role since 1962 at liberation from the French. The army has played a major role in Algerian politics, and everything the army is doing now is an effort to maintain the position of army in the Algerian power structure and to play a behind-the-scenes role to get through a crisis. I think part of what the general is trying to accomplish is to signal to the population that the army is not interested in a coup to get rid of the president, but wants a constitutional solution that is assisted by the army.
But the leaders of the protest movement reject the army's transition plan and demand the overthrow of the entire ruling elite. Given that the Algerians do not trust their opposition parties, who should lead any potential transition in Algeria?
Well, it would obviously have to be a mix of people. And if the leaders of the protest movement don't like any of the opposition parties, they're going to have to form an organization or a party that would probably have to cooperate with other political parties and with elements of the regime that are acceptable in order to have a political transition. Political transitions are always very complex, and the best political transitions have representatives of every political current in the society so that everyone feels included in the political transition.
But under what circumstances would Algeria witness a military takeover similar to what happened in Egypt in 2013?
The most likely circumstance would be if there was an election in which someone was elected that was not acceptable to the regime. So, for example, in Egypt in 2013 or in Algeria in 1992, elections have produced a result that was unacceptable to the regime and there was a military coup. I think right now in Algeria, it's less like 1992 in Algeria and more like 2011 in Egypt. And in 2011 in Egypt, the army wanted to hang on to its powers within a government in transition with a leader that would also help the army maintain its status and its position in the society. But it's not even sure yet if that democratic transition is going to happen. So it'll be interesting going forward to see how organized the crowd gets, and then once organized, who their interlocutors are in the regime that try to make this critical transition happen.
And that was William Lawrence, Professor of International Relations at George Washington University, speaking there with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shanawi. And you're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington. And at 19 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The death toll continues to rise in Southeast Africa from Cyclone Idai, with concerns about the fast-rising spread of cholera. Political violence flares in the Comoros, and there are reports of more protests in Algeria. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Well, there are news reports that say an anti-stall system was activated on the Ethiopian Airlines Boeing 737 MAX 8 jet before it crashed on March 10th. The Wall Street Journal newspaper and the French news agency Today both quoted sources familiar with the preliminary findings of the investigation. The Ethiopian Airlines crash, which killed 157 people, was similar to the crash of a 737 MAX 8 jet in Indonesia in October that killed all 189 people on board. Investigators in Indonesia have also targeted their probe on the plane's anti-stall system. Boeing said earlier this week it is close to completing a software upgrade to the anti-stall system on the 737 MAX jets. On Thursday, a lawsuit was filed against Boeing in the U.S. federal court in connection with a crash in Ethiopia. The UN Security Council is meeting today on Mali with Prime Minister Sumelu Bube Maiga and UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres attending. The UN urged Mali's government to investigate the killing of more than 150 Fulani civilians last Saturday in Ogosagu in the Mopti region of central Mali, and to bring those perpetrators to justice. VOA French to Africa staffer Raissa Girondin spoke to Mali's Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation, Kamisa Kamara, ahead of the UN meeting.
I believe that the government took responsibility by dissolving the militia and making sure that they do not have the legality or the institutional basis to conduct the activities that they have been conducting. The head of the militia denied the killings and even went as far as to say that he does not even acknowledge the dissolution of his group by the government. We believe that the fact that the government already made it public that it does not recognize this group as being an association or a militia group anymore is important. It's a good step forward. Now, what the government would like to do and has started doing is disarming the different militias that we're seeing in the center of the country. They've been popping up left and right, and they have created a lot of havoc in the center of the country.
Clashes between the Fulani and Dogon's community are not quite new, but the death toll on this last attack is very high. What is leading to the escalation of violence in this region?
That there are structural challenges typical to the center of Mali. You have a melting pot of very different ethnic groups who've lived together for centuries. They have lived together according to customary laws, which have helped them be peaceful and share resources. However, you have climate change added to that, the terrorist threat in the region and mostly in the center that has basically made weapons available to rival groups. And now we're seeing that the state laws are not strong enough to combat this phenomena in the center of Mali.
It is not the first time that those kind of attacks happen in the region. Why is the Malian government struggling so hard to improve security in this area?
The Malian government is not only struggling to secure the central part of Mali, but we've remembered not long ago, it was maybe 5 years ago, that we were struggling to secure the northern part of the country. You have to look at Mali as this huge country, which is 62% of Malian terrain is desert. And in those 62%, you only have 9% of the population. Yet, it is in those 62% that you have a very fragile security situation. So we have to work in a very vast environment, and with limited resources, it makes it very difficult for us.
In addition to the Malian army, there is Barkhane, the French military force, and the UN mission to Mali, MINUSMA. Is the government planning to redefine their respective mission?
I think what we are currently advocating is for the MINUSMA's mandate to be renewed, and we would like the MINUSMA to remain in its current form. We would like to continue to see Barkhane operating in the region. The gains have been very fragile, and we need to solidify them.
And that was Mali's Foreign Minister Kamisa Camara speaking there with VOA's Raissa Girondin from New York. Pope Francis heads to Morocco this weekend as part of his mission to grow ties with moderate Muslims in the concept that all people are brothers who should respect each other's beliefs. Tomorrow, the Pope will visit the Muhammad VI Institute, which trains imams from as far away as Europe and sub-Saharan Africa. They are expected to play a part in fighting fundamentalism. The Pope will also show support for migrants by visiting a migrant center run by the Catholic Church's Caritas charity organization, and he'll attend a mass on Sunday. In February, the Pope and the Imam of Cairo's Al-Azhar, the seat of Sunni learning, signed a landmark joint statement establishing the relationship between Catholics and Muslims with a common mission to promote peace. It's the first visit to Morocco by a Pope in 35 years. The country is officially Sunni, but the constitution guarantees freedom of religion. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, do visit our website at voaafrica.com. And please stay tuned to The Sunny Side of Sport. That's coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Audrius Regis, thank you for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Press Conference USA. This week, I talked with three co-hosts of VOA's newest roundtable discussion show, Our Voices, which focuses on African women's points of view. It's the first time VOA has produced content exclusively driven by female journalists on serious topics affecting the continent. That's Press Conference USA, Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.